636-1155. This has been a public service announcement by WBAI on behalf of the Bedford-Stuyvesant Community Legal Services Corporation.
Well, just remember, their motto is protect and serve.
If you've been abused or harassed by the police, then document it. Call the New York City Police Watch Hotline at 212-614-6454. For information and legal referrals, the New York City Police Watch Hotline, 212-614-6454. If the police abuse or harass, let's document it. This has been a public service announcement on behalf of the Ella Baker Center for Human Rights, a nonprofit organization.
And you're listening to the station that documents all kinds of things that nobody else documents. WBAI New York, it's time now for Off the Hook. To everybody. The program is Off the Hook. This is Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on the last program of the year 1998. That's right, next week it'll be the last week before the year 2000, or whatever you want to call it, Armageddon, the end of the world as we know it. And what fun it's going to be. We have assembled with us a group of experts, historians, if you will, who will be looking over the most historical moments of this past year. We have Isaac over there from Queens.
Howdy, hello.
We have Porkchop, who flew in from New Jersey.
Greetings, world.
And we have Bernie S. out there in Philadelphia.
Good evening.
And, of course, we'll be taking your phone calls as well. A little later on, though, so I'll just hang out a bit. Well, then. I'm going to go around the room, or around the microphones here. Start with Bernie down in Philadelphia. What do you think the most memorable event of 1998 was, as far as computer hackers, technology, Big Brother, things like that?
Well, it's hard to pick one, Emmanuel. There have been a lot of things going on. And I guess I have to figure out what I'm most outraged about, maybe. But a lot of things have gone on, all of which you probably talked about this year. But we have to sum these up. So I guess I can't stop forgetting about Kevin Mitnick being locked up every day, because I can relate to what he's going through very well. And
1998 was the year Kevin Mitnick celebrated his 35th birthday in prison.
Mm-hmm. And I spent almost 4 years locked up without a trial.
That's right. It also was the year that the Free Kevin movement really started in earnest. Bumper stickers started showing up every place, demonstrations. But of course, that was prompted by the announcement of a film being made, which I believe was back in June. They made that announcement that Takedown, the movie, would be made based on the book Takedown. And it would star Skeet Ulrich, amongst many others. And that launched a demonstration outside Miramax in July, and also prompted a bunch of us to go out and make a film of our own, or shoot a film anyway. We haven't finished making it yet, but we will. And then, of course, you also had a whole lot of websites get hacked with Free Kevin messages, including the New York Times. And what a lot of reaction that got. The New York Times, of course, the newspaper where John Markoff wrote his stories about Kevin Mitnick many years ago, that sort of propelled him literally into a page one fugitive, and that made him get caught all the quicker and sentenced, not even sentenced yet, but just imprisoned all the stronger, or whatever word you want to use.
So, and made a lot of money for John Markoff.
It certainly did. Certainly did. And Satomo Shimomura, the two authors of the book Takedown, which they agreed to write less than a week after the stories in the New York Times appeared. So, you know, a few people had problems with that, you know, with the journalistic integrity of the New York Times there, because John Markoff had also been there for the arrest of Kevin Mitnick, the capture and arrest of Kevin Mitnick. A lot of people said there was a conflict of interest there. He took part in the story, he wrote about the story, he profited from the story, made a book and a movie. You know, that's how journalism works in this country, apparently. It's rather sad. So yeah, all that came to light this year. That's probably the most dramatic, I would say. Isaac, what about you?
My most memorable moment of 1998.
Well, it doesn't have to be the most memorable moment, but just one of the memorable
moments. A high
moments.
Point is 1998.
I know you've had lots of memorable moments this year.
We all have. Can I take two?
Go ahead.
Really quick? Okay, the first was the declaration of war against Microsoft, where the DOJ started filing all their action suits against poor little company up
poor
in
Bill
Washington.
Gates. I feel very sorry for Bill.
Yeah, I really do as well. And the barrage that NT has taken from free open source software like Linux,
mm-hmm.
where all of a sudden a lot of these people are realizing, hey, we really don't have to train people for, you know, $20,000 to take that NT BS course, whatever it is.
Those fat cat Linux people are out to get Bill Gates. You know?
Oh, sure. But it's, you know, it's a freebie. People are waking up to the fact that, you know, Microsoft just puts out a bad product.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's Microsoft. There's a lot of things going on there. The other one I'd probably point out is Y2K, where people are...
Y2K is in 2 years. That didn't happen this year.
Well, it's going to happen in 2 years, but 1998 has really been one of the high points of people becoming aware of the fact, whether it's for the better... I really couldn't tell you, but people are starting to wake up to what a lot of engineers have known for some time.
Well, people are also starting to panic a bit.
Well, people are definitely starting to panic a bit.
And other people are waking up to that.
The
fact that people are about to panic. It's like a planned riot, you know. Everyone's going to start freaking out in about a year.
There's theories about that as well,
uh-huh.
if it was planned.
It should be really interesting, though. It should be really interesting to see. Future archivists who are listening to this radio show on the website, if in fact there is a website in a year... just notice the increasing, you know, intensity of our pleas to remain calm as the year goes by, and how things just sort of fell apart in the end.
Are you putting the off-the-hook CDs in a time capsule somewhere, Emmanuel?
Well, we're going to shoot them up with a satellite and keep them up there, 22,300 miles up above the equator. And hopefully nobody will mess with them this time.
Well, we could send them off into deep space, like the record on the Galileo probe, so that Off the Hook would be the first contact intelligent life would have with the planet Earth. Wouldn't
waiting list to get into deep space, though, is rather long right now. It's also the year the FCC actually started charging for 800 numbers. That's one of my most bitter memories. 35 cents for every call to an 800 number. It gets billed to the person who owns the 800 number, so therefore that person bills it back in some way.
Or the payphone.
Yeah, from a payphone. It still doesn't make any sense. I still have a lot of trouble explaining it to people. But that's why there's a new surcharge when you use calling cards, because the FCC did something really stupid, I think. Porchef, how about you?
Well, one interesting thing is web pages are getting hacked in record numbers now. It's really become the thing to do.
It's a new American pastime.
Yeah. I saw... Yesterday alone, there were three hacks that I saw mm-hmm. of just people sending mail saying, hey, look, this has been hacked.
Well,
hacked.
The reason for that, people are trying to boost the yearly average. They only have a few days left, so they have
yeah.
to cram in as many as they can to make this the banner year for hacking websites.
Exactly.
It's like Giuliani boasting how we've had fewer murders this year since, 1950 or something like that? Come on, use your brain here. You don't boast about it till after it's over. Can you think of some, you know, maniac Democrat out there who just wants to make Giuliani look bad?
Wants to prove them all wrong.
And mows down, like, you know, 100 people. And there goes the average right there, you know? And those Democrats will do it, too. I watch TV, I know. Yeah, absolutely.
Not really worried about the Democrats, more the Republicans.
Well, let's not get political here. Have to avoid controversy like that. What else? We saw a high school student get expelled for writing an article on hacking. Remember that?
I remember that. That
yeah.
Was interesting.
Yeah. And ADSL is coming. ADSL started to make its moves into the tri-state area. Bernie, I think you have ADSL down there, don't you?
Well, we have it in the outskirts of Philadelphia. I called Bell Atlantic a couple weeks ago about this, and they have it in many suburbs all around Philadelphia, but not in the city itself. I said, well, why don't you put it where all the people are?
That's great.
You might sell more that way. And they said, oh, they haven't gotten around to that yet.
That is Bell Atlantic logic. We lost 9X, of course. I believe we lost 9X last year, late last year, but this was the first year that Bell Atlantic really sort of took hold in the tri-state area. Well, New Jersey always had them, but New York, Connecticut, places like that. Also, it was the year of strikes. That's right. Bell Atlantic went on strike. SNET went on strike. US West went on strike. That was interesting. Bit of some labor issues there. Also, speaking of US West, it was the year US West computers set out to find a new prime number.
Yeah. Did they succeed? Or?
I don't know. No, I think they caught the guy before they actually found a new prime number.
Just
to clarify, it was not an authorized US West operation. It was one of their employees decided to use all their computers and try to find a new prime number with their massive computing power. However, that wound up slowing down the time that the operators would answer phone calls, information operators, I believe, to something like a minute and a half or 2.5 minutes. People didn't really notice, though, because it takes a while sometimes to get an operator, since there's only like three now that work there. Automation's been taking over. It's been a year of increasing layoffs, consolidations, corporate mergers. Who can name the largest corporate merger this year?
I'd probably take a stab with AOL and Netscape.
AOL taking over Netscape. Bernie, you have any suggestions?
One of the telcos, but the name escapes me. The names escape me.
Bell South?
That might have been it.
Uh-huh. I believe Bell South wants to take over GTE.
It's getting harder and harder to keep track of.
I think that was it. It's really ridiculous. It's all going to wind up being run by the same people. Radio. This has been an incredible year for radio. Bernie, maybe you can show us some of the things that happened this year.
The FCC is running amok trying to squelch the free radio movement. In fact, just over the past few weeks, the FCC has gotten off their four-and-a-half-year hiatus of not going after shortwave radio pirates or free shortwave stations in the United States. And just over the past 3 months or so, they've busted about a half dozen, basically taken down, seized the radio equipment. Now, these are shortwave radio stations that are operating on a frequency that is not assigned to any other service. In other words, they're definitely not interfering with any other radio station. Like, the most popular pirate shortwave frequency is a 6955 kilohertz on your shortwave dial. And some good stations out there, and several of them have been taken off the air this year, but that pales in comparison to all the FM broadcast band pirates or free radio stations.
There have been a lot of them. Radio Mutiny in Philadelphia.
Yeah, a station very near and dear to my heart.
Steelless Radio in New York.
Mm-hmm.
Berkeley.
Free Radio Berkeley. Which, incidentally, very recently, a new station has popped up in Berkeley called Tree Radio Berkeley. It's broadcast from a tree. And it's called Tree Radio Berkeley because the person who started Free Radio Berkeley was warned that if any radio station started up under the same name, Free Radio Berkeley, that he would be he'd be prosecuted, even if he had nothing to do with it. So some other...
How is that kind of logic legal? I mean, I could go out there now, start a radio station called Free Radio Berkeley, and Steve Dunifer will get charged with it. I mean, that doesn't make any sense.
Well, a lot of these things don't make any sense, Emmanuel. But anyhow, now there's a Tree Radio Berkeley.
Mm-hmm.
Not to be confused with Free Radio Berkeley, even though it sounds very much the same. broadcasting from a tree in Berkeley. The links that people will go to express free speech in various mediums is
impressive. That's a good point, but I have a slight problem with this because I've noticed that there's a trend here where a lot of these stations pop up and they broadcast for a time to become quite popular, and then the FCC says something, warns them, visits, and they disappear and they don't come back. Now, the only way you can really win a struggle like this is by constantly putting the pressure on, constantly challenging them. And if they have to, you know, grab your equipment, then you have to get more equipment. You have to appeal to people and find more equipment somehow. They may arrest people. Okay, that's if you believe in something, you should believe in it enough to get arrested for it. That's just my opinion. If you're not in this for the, for the long haul, you know, it's not just a fad. It's not just a weekend hobby or something like that. There's a very important statement to be made here. The airwaves have been taken over by a very small amount of people. There are companies now that own close to 500 radio stations. It's almost unbelievable when you think of the power these people have now.
We can thank the Telecommunications Act of 1996 for that.
That's right. And we can thank that for quite a few things. But that's definitely one of the most, I guess, insidious things that hurts everybody, because, you know, you have one voice, think of it, saying all these things on all these different radio stations, but it's one voice only. You have to challenge that. You have to challenge it and have diversity, and if that means standing up to authority figures, you stand up to them. If they warn you, you know, you do what you have to do to keep that voice coming out. You're speaking for lots and lots of people, and that's, you know, the only thing I'm saying here is that I just think people need to stand up a bit longer, and more people need to be standing up a bit longer. Support these stations. Make sure that the current policies, you know, are challenged. They have to be. If they're not, what kind of a society are we going to have in 5 years?
Well, the FCC is gathering a huge amount of seized equipment in its Washington, D.C. headquarters. Not just Radio Mutiny's entire station, but literally dozens of other stations were seized this year. This is the kind of stuff you hear about in third world countries, where the government seizes radio stations that are broadcasting things they don't happen to agree with, and it's happening here now. And it's something that I'm hoping, just by sheer numbers of the number of free radio stations that pop up, the FCC will not be able to keep up with them.
And just to clear the air on something. This has got nothing to do with interfering with existing radio stations. That is always what you hear them talking about. Oh, they were causing a hazard to aviation, even, or they were interfering with a 50,000-watt radio station. In the vast majority of cases, something like 90% plus, these stations operate on frequencies far away from anything else local, and they certainly don't interfere with airplanes. They're 20-watt stations that broadcast to a few blocks in a major city, perhaps. There are no threat. Technically, maybe they're a threat politically, that's possible, but let's at least, you know, address this thing for what it is.
Many times commercial broadcast stations will complain when they hear a free radio station on the air.
Mm-hmm.
Sour grapes kind of thing, because they realize that if one listener is listening to this free radio station, then it's not listening to their radio station, and therefore not hearing their commercials, and therefore they can't charge as much for broadcasting those commercials, and therefore it's a commercial threat. Now, I don't think it's a big commercial threat, but the commercial radio stations don't want any kind of pressing to get started, so
right. They
will oftentimes file false complaints against a station, saying that a free radio station is interfering with their signal, when oftentimes it's not. But the FCC then has a good excuse to legally go after the free radio station.
Well, it's all about greed, you know. It's all about how much money you can possibly make by forcing people, literally forcing people to just listen to your words. And, you know, in many ways, that's something else we've seen media-wise, you know, as far as news is reported. It's not as obvious, because you think you're getting diversity. You think there's diversity between ABC, CBS, and NBC, and, you know, Fox, and UPN, and all those crazy people. There's really no diversity. There's really nothing different being said. If you want something different to be said, listen to something like BAI. Listen to something like microbroadcasting.
Or shortwave.
Well, people don't listen to shortwave because it's too much of a bother.
Oh, you can get a reasonable shortwave receiver for $50 and
at
Radio Shack, and you can pick up numerous stations all over the world in English, broadcasting news and views that are vastly different than what you're going to pick up in American media.
But Bernie, how many of them have Dolby surround sound?
Not many.
Well, we demand that in America, you see.
That's right.
That's the problem. We have to be catered. Every whim has to be catered to. So yeah, it's an urgent problem. I think probably the biggest problem facing us in the years ahead is control of the media. And the airwaves are public airwaves. They belong to the people. It's something that we seem to have forgotten, and something we're on the verge of losing on the internet. The internet, of course, being the last bastion of free speech that there is. Whatever you can't hear on the airwaves, you can probably find if you look for it on the net. And of course, there are people who want to stop that as well. So that's something else we have to defend.
And even at your public library, they're trying to stop it.
Everywhere. Public library, schools, internet service providers. You know, at every level, it's being fought. Speaking of which, this was the year Timothy McVeigh, the other Timothy McVeigh, got kicked out of the Navy for being gay on AOL. Remember that?
Yes.
Yeah.
And, whatever happened to that case? So was
I believe,
that settled out of court?
I believe he got a nice settlement from the Navy because they acted improperly by...
And from AOL, I would hope.
Well, I believe so. AOL, of course, gave out his information to a Navy undercover agent, and they confirmed that this person who is
illegally, you might ask.
Of course. Yes. Totally illegally. He was openly gay on AOL, but not openly gay in the Navy, but they linked him to the AOL account, so then they said, okay, you're gay, you're out. And, of course, that caused even more controversy than his name.
Don't ask, don't tell. Isn't that how it's supposed to work?
Yeah. Don't ask, don't tell. But there's a lot of a lot of probing going on anyway. And
in more ways than one.
It's about as useless as any other Clinton policy, if you ask me. You know, it's don't ask, don't tell. I mean, it just doesn't work. Anyway, as far as other net things, remember the Ontario Real Estate Online Services?
Oreos.com.
He
never got back to me.
Yeah, I don't know what happened to him, but he still has the site. This is a guy who registered Oreos.com, and the Oreos cookie people got really upset at him and sent him all kinds of threatening mail. How big a threat can something coming from Oreos be?
RJR Nabisco?
I guess if they put that letterhead on, yeah.
Well, RJR Nabisco is the manufacturer of Oreos. I mean, these people are also the ones that kill millions of Americans by handing out cigarettes, so...
RJR Nabisco hands out cigarettes? How could they do such a thing?
Well, I don't know. They're either going to hook you on nicotine or they're going to hook you on sugar. So.
What cigarettes does Nabisco make?
Not Nabisco, but... I forget the actual brand name of the cigarettes.
You're trying to tell me...
Isn't Marlboro an RJR brand?
Marlboro is an RJR brand. Thank you.
Yes.
You're trying to tell me that Nabisco is actually owned by a tobacco company?
Yes.
I'm shocked.
Oh.
You can tell by the ashen look on my face that I am totally shocked by this revelation here. So this keeps going. These huge companies own everything.
Oh yeah.
Media, cookies. Oh, it's scary. It really is. Speaking of scary, how about this? The Pentagon got hacked. The Pentagon got hacked in the worst attack that they've seen to this date, and it was a bunch of 14-year-olds from California, two of them actually, and one mysterious Israeli named the Analyzer. Who Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said was very good. But dangerous, he added later.
No, he said damn good.
They say damn good?
Damn good.
I wasn't sure if he said that. Okay, damn good, but dangerous. But not the kind of thing that someone would say about a hacker in this country.
True.
They'd throw them in prison. I don't know what the analyzer is doing now. I think he's serving in the military.
He's probably analyzing certain cryptographic transmissions within the Israeli military.
Well, the interesting thing was, when that press release came out, or press conference about the Pentagon being hacked, the day after, was it the day after? Janet Reno announced all this new funding to battle just that.
Oh, yes, the consolidation of the Pentagon information protection infrastructure, something or other.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a reaction kind of thing. I just find it interesting that a couple of teenagers from this country managed to wreak so much havoc. Imagine what skillful nationals of some foreign power
well-funded.
To do. Oh,
yeah,
very well-funded.
Well-funded people. Imagine what they could do. It's funny how they never seem to do it.
Well, they're still trying to develop their biological and chemical weapons.
Yeah.
And getting their nukes from the former Soviet Union, but that's another story.
Yeah, it is another story. Definitely. So the Pentagon hackers were sentenced to probation, I believe, and they had to stay away from computers for a while. And that was it. They didn't go to prison, fortunately. That would have been... a bit much, I think, just for
Well, it's already happened for somebody who did far less.
Oh, of course.
He's been there for a while.
Yes, that's true. But these are 14, 15-year-olds, you know.
True.
I think we haven't quite reached the stage yet where somebody... What was that beep?
Sounds like a phone.
Bernie, is that you?
Not me.
That's awfully strange.
Should I start running, or...
Where's it coming from? It's coming on your line, Bernie. You're the only line on the phone.
I've never heard a sound like this on my Sprint PCS phone before.
No, actually,
right,
that's
in the room.
That's coming from a...
That's in the room itself. That's not on the
you mean
radio equipment
here?
Itself.
Yeah. Say hi.
There, I just hung it up. Why is... I still don't know why there's a phone there. It doesn't make any sense. Oh, now it's ringing again. You know what? I'm going to unplug you. Try ringing now. Now it's just a wire. Okay, that's enough of that.
You touched on the subject of encryption, and the Clinton administration is still doing its level best to try to restrict the use of encryption around the world. Earlier this month, the Wassenaar arrangement was signed by 33 countries after much arm-twisting by the United States government, which basically outlaws the export of any really secure encryption software, classifies it as a munition, like a bazooka or a chemical weapon or something. So I think the FBI's next target is to restrict the use of secure encryption domestically. They haven't stated that that's their intent, but if you look the way the wind is blowing, that's the next battle. So I encourage everyone listening to contact their legislators, their senators, and Congress people, and urge them to support privacy, private communications amongst their constituents by not passing any, or voting against any legislation that would restrict the use of any encryption by U.S. citizens.
This is also the year of WIPO, the World Intellectual Property
Organization.
And it was passed, but so far I haven't seen any real effect on people. You see, that's another thing. It sort of ties into the whole micro-broadcasting thing, where people see something evil happen, and right away they submit to it. They say, oh, that means we can't play around with software anymore. We can't try and crack something. You know, it's illegal now. Well, if you think it's wrong, then you challenge it. You don't submit to it. You know, that's why I didn't really take the WIPO stuff all that seriously, because it was so ridiculous. I didn't see how it could possibly ever be enforced.
Well, something on the books to like bring up against somebody later on.
Sure, it's not about whether they want to enforce it. It's having something that can be selectively enforced against anyone they want to in the future.
Very correct.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, how are they going to do this? You got to think about it. How are they actually going to prosecute something like this? It's almost impossible. You have to go into someone's mind. You have to see what they're doing in their homes and figure it out that way. It's just, I don't know. And I think it also goes against what most people believe in as far as what you know what people have the right to do.
What if your home is searched with justifiably good intent by a law enforcement officer, and they search through your hard drive and find a piece of software that's been cracked that you don't have a license for, then even though they may have had questionable probable cause, once they found something, then they'll make up some kind of probable cause as to why they believe you had that on your computer. And then you can go away for quite a long time.
Well,
it sounds far-fetched.
It does sound far-fetched, but yes, I know, and you're living proof that that kind of thing can happen.
You issue a warrant for the hard drive and anything that might just happen to be on it.
Hey, the New Republic article, remember that? That happened earlier this year. The article that said that there was this fictitious... Well, they didn't call him a fictitious hacker at the time. This hacker that was intimidating all these huge companies and getting money out of them to not hack their systems. And
oh, the
buying, yeah, buying expensive cars and having the hacker Congress back him up.
Is that 12-year-old?
No, I think it was 15. I think it was 15. But it turned out, it showed up in the New Republic, and it turned out that the entire story was just made up. That's after they printed it as fact.
And I wonder what happened to that author.
I think he got fired.
He
no longer works there, but I think he's still living in the free world, and who knows? He might be lying to somebody else right now. But the New Republic, you know, they said, yeah, the guy is, you know, a liar, but they never really apologized to the hackers for the things that they said about that community.
Well, we're an easy target. We don't really stand up for ourselves. We tend to stay in the background and just kind of dodge whatever bullets are there.
Speaking of dodging bullets, I don't know if you heard this story. As far as... Sorry, what?
Don't get off that subject. Speaking of reliability of news media, wasn't this the year which CNN was sued or something? I forget the topic of the story. It had something to do with the military.
Yes, CNN and Time put out a report saying that there were massacres at U.S. troops engaged in massacres in Southeast Asia.
That's right. And was it Wolf Blitzer, or I could be wrong, or Peter Arnett, one of those two reporters that said, basically, don't go by me, I'm just reading this, you know?
Uh-huh.
So I guess it's okay, you know, don't take anything that they say on these broadcast news channels as being accurate, because he's just reading that. He didn't do the actual reporting, you know, he's just reading it, so therefore... He's not responsible for its accuracy.
Right. I can't believe people would cop out like that.
Hang on. I was just following orders.
I'm sorry, what did you say?
I was just following orders.
Yes. Well, now, speaking of dodging bullets, though, I'm sure a lot of us saw this story. This raises a number of issues with me. I got this off the Wired website, which I visit occasionally for laughs. And the headline is the first thing that got me. Chinese hackers get death. Now, first of all, you know Wired is extremely anal retentive about the word hacker and cracker. They love this word, this fake word cracker, and they try to basically malign a whole group of people by calling them all crackers. You know, the evil ones, the bad ones, the bad apples, the crackers. Now, these guys, they stole money out of a bank, but for some reason Wired decides to call them hackers, because I guess it's more dramatic to say Chinese hackers get death. You know, and saying Chinese crackers get death, people will say, "What does that mean?" You know, and they don't realize that people say that.
Wild.
Yeah.
It goes back to our previous Nabisco point.
Mm-hmm.
With the never mind, it's bad pun.
Anyway, two hackers who broke into a bank computer network and stole 260,000 yuan. How do you say that? Yuan. I'm not sure exactly how to pronounce it, but it amounts to $31,400. They were sentenced to death by a court in eastern China, and they opened 16 accounts in the various names in the branch of the bank in September, later broke into the branch to install a controlling device in a bank computer terminal. They used the device to electronically wire money into non-existent accounts, non-existent deposits into the bank accounts, and afterwards they successfully withdrew money from 8 different branches of the bank. And all the money has been returned. So they didn't actually lose anything, but they're still sentencing them to death just to teach them a lesson. And of course, no, they certainly won't. It's not a good thing. It's not a good thing. I don't want to quibble over the use of the word hacker there, because that's something that's just plain wrong, to sentence somebody to death or something like that. But, you know, it's not too far from where we're heading right now. I'm not saying hackers are going to be sentenced to death anytime soon, but we're the only industrialized country that's increasing the use of the death penalty, and it's really, really taking off like a rocket.
Against kids, too.
Against anybody,
yeah,
really.
Yeah.
And not just for murder. You know, the Clinton's crime bill of 1994 has all kinds of federal crimes that, you know, that you could be sentenced to death for, including drug-related things, and kidnapping. I think even carjacking's in there somewhere in the special circumstances. But, you know, it's scary when you move in that direction. So you got to be... You got to be careful there. Okay, 212-209-2900 is our phone number. We're talking about the highlights of 1998. Anybody else have anything they want to add before we take some phone calls?
Why do you keep playing with my mic? On the software side of things, at DEF CON this year was the release of Back Orifice from the fine people over at CDC, which I suppose would go back to my War on Microsoft point. But interesting little package that... had a bunch of people raising eyebrows, except for Microsoft, which disavowed any knowledge of its existence or its threat capability.
True. Okay, now 212-209-2900 is our telephone number. And let's... there's all these phones that are broken. Wow. Let's take this one over here. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yeah, hello. My big thing is with this MP3 thing, man. These record companies want to pimp these artists, man. And any way these artists want to be independent, man. These record companies want to pull back and say, oh, no, we can't let these artists get away with that. So they try to come up with a new format called MP4. And that's one of the biggest things that really get on my nerves right now.
Really? So describe for us the problem that artists are having right now with MP3.
Yeah, for example, Public Enemy Rap Group. Mm-hmm. This guy put on his MP3 file. His record company put him to take it off. And he was talking about how the record companies is wanting to pimp these artists.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And, I mean, I listen to MP3. I think it's real nice, though. I mean, the artists, for example, Prince. Prince, he's independent. He don't have to worry about the nonsense. I mean, it's just aggravating. I mean, as for Microsoft is digging their own grave. Within 5 years, they'll be gone.
Really?
Yeah, 5 to 10 years, they'll be gone. Linux, first of all, Microsoft is too stubborn to open up their own source code. With all the money they have, they think, oh, you know, we'll be fat and greedy. We don't want to fix our own. We have to wait until a service pack in January to download. I mean, it's aggravating.
Mm-hmm. Okay, anything else that you want to add for the year 1998?
Well, I just picked up the Red Hat Linux. You know, I can't really set it up on my laptop, but, you know, I wait until I get a desktop, though.
Why can't you set it up on your laptop?
No, there's different... It has a lot to do with different configurations, like video card and things like that.
Uh-huh.
And memory constraints. I was reading all that stuff.
Well, the thing about Linux is you can make it work on a toaster if you really try.
Yeah, I'm a fiddle with it, though.
Uh-huh.
You know, but, you know, as for Microsoft, boy.
Yeah.
It won't be long. It won't be long before Linux is the standard, though, and we're going to have to learn everything. Forget about DOS. Everybody's going to have to learn Linux, though.
Well, that'll be something.
Yeah. That's going to be the standard. All right.
Thanks for the call.
All right, bye.
Interesting. Thoughts?
A bright future for open source. I like the gentleman's optimism.
Yeah,
that would be a good thing. One quick thing on Microsoft. If I were them, I would just split now on my own terms instead of being sentenced to split.
How do you do that?
Well, they can split their companies up. They can chop themselves in half if they wanted to. They just give their board of directors, I think this is the way it works, you give your board of directors each a slice of the action, and you split on your own terms instead of being told this is how you're going to go. Have fun.
Let's take another phone call, 212-209-2900. Good evening, you're on the air. Speak up, please. Okay, you gotta talk to us. That's the condition here, that's the agreement. Good evening, you're on the air.
Hey, how's it going?
Okay, how are you?
Telefreak. Isn't this more of the year of, like, false broadcasting, like with the Washington Post article and things like that?
Well, a lot of inaccurate news stories have shown up. You're referring to the Washington Post article about Agent Steele.
Exactly.
Agent Steele, another story of 1998. Agent Steele was put back into prison for a probation violation, then became a fugitive, then was caught and put back into prison again. And I believe he's going to be sentenced. Get this, he's going to be sentenced in early January. He goes through the justice system like nothing. But Kevin's in there for 4 years, and you know, who knows what he's going to be sentenced to, or if he's, you know, found guilty or innocent, or if he's even going to get a trial. And yeah, okay. So we had a story from the Washington Post about the whole Agent Steele saga, and they mentioned in passing Kevin Mitnick. In one sentence, they managed to get the facts wrong. They said that he was being accused of or charged with credit card fraud or stealing credit card numbers, and he was never charged with that. And we, what happened was we wound up sending letters to them, contacting them, calling them, you know, shining lights at them, everything we could to get their attention, and they just didn't do anything. But finally, last Saturday, I believe, they printed a letter from someone who sent in a letter.
Oh, wow, look at that.
Yeah, they finally at least printed someone else's views. They didn't acknowledge anything. They didn't print a correction or a retraction or anything like that, but at least they allowed somebody else to say they were wrong.
Yeah, a couple other, like TV shows and things like that. They like all things about Kevin. They were like, yeah, he's got a whole bunch of credit card numbers, and just like the Washington Post thing.
Uh huh.
It's pretty messed up, I guess.
It is. It definitely is, and it's you know, it shows us a lot of what's wrong with the media today, what's wrong with the way press works, and how once you say something that's false and you say it in an authoritative way,
millions of people believe it,
and it becomes truth. It's repeated time and time again. You know, we're still fighting mistruths that were spread back in 1995 that just keep getting repeated. It's really sad.
Yep.
Thanks for the call.
Well, not.
And that brings up another issue. Where's there some space? I want to demonstrate this. This is the Guinness Book of World Records. I'm going to throw this over on the table. So this can, it used to be a paperback book, and obviously it's not a paperback book anymore. It's a big hardcover thing. It looks really
coffee table
drinks. Ominous and scary. Yeah. Now here's you would think that they would just keep to world records, but they don't anymore. They branched out. They do other things. I actually went down to the bookstore and got a copy of the 1999 Guinness Book of World Records. And in there is a category for most notorious hacker case. You didn't think that was a world record, did you? Most notorious hacker case.
How do they quantify that?
I don't know. I'm not sure how they get something like this.
They used to have this whole chapter on how they measured all these different things that were in the book, like the different measurement systems they used to quantify these records.
Yeah.
How do they quantify this one?
Did they have judges come by and look at him or something? You know, I intend to challenge this. I think, for one, Rebel is a much more notorious hacker than Kevin Mitnick. All right, and I intend to have them correct this and put the right name there. And picture, too, because I have one. Yeah, all right. Hacker Kevin Mitnick, basically, it's only a paragraph, but we're going to stop every time they make a mistake, okay? Well, we already stopped at the title, Most Notorious Hacker Case. That's, you know, really subjective there. Hacker Kevin Mitnick is alleged to have broken into several major organizations' computer systems, including those of Sun Microsystems, Motorola, and the Pentagon. Okay, stop right there.
The Pentagon.
The Pentagon.
Wow.
I never heard that before.
I've heard all kinds of things before, but that has never been alleged, documented, anything. You know, and I'm going to challenge these people on this. Tell me when he hacked into the Pentagon, when he was accused of hacking into the Pentagon. Never happened.
Well, they got it from the Times, who got it from the Post, who got it from this, that, and the other media sources.
Right, and
reliable sources.
We interviewed John Markoff over the summer, who said that the NORAD story was wrong. It's totally wrong. He regrets ever having printed it. It was based on bad information. All right, here we go. Mitnick was arrested on September 16, 1996. Okay, stop again. That's wrong. He was not arrested September 16, 1996. That's when he was indicted. That's when the indictment was handed out after being in prison for more than a year. He was arrested February 15th, 1995. I mean, come on, how hard is it to check these things out? You're the Guinness Book of World Records, for God's sake. You're supposed to know these things. Oh, arrested on September 16th, 1996. And this also makes it look like, you know, he wasn't in prison all that long. You know, well, I mean, it's still a long time. It's still a long time. But, I mean, look at the way we're thinking now, you know. It's like 2 years and change. That's not so long. Of course it's long. Hell, a month is long. All right. After an FBI computer expert tracked him down. Whoa. Now, hold on a second.
What?
Yeah, now, you know, I'm seeing this everywhere. I saw this in Louis Freeh's FBI speech back in 1997 that we just got a hold of. Was it 97? Yeah, I think it was. Where he said that the FBI hired somebody to find Mitnick. Now the Guinness Book of World Records is saying an FBI computer expert tracked him down. Tsutomu Shimomura, the person who did track him down, steadfastly says that he was never hired by the government, was not working for them. Who is lying here? Who is not telling the truth? It's either Louis Freeh is not telling the truth, or Tsutomu Shimomura is not telling the truth. Somebody's got it wrong. And the Guinness Book of World Records seems to be banking on Louis Freeh here, that he's telling the truth. So these are things that really demand answers. Okay, let's continue. We're about halfway through now. Hang on a second. No, it's okay. He has since been charged with software theft, wire fraud, the interception of wire communications, and computer vandalism. Okay, let's stop computer right there. Well, the interception of wire communications? He was never charged with that.
I don't know.
He was never. You know, what he was charged with was basically saying he was somebody he wasn't. If you look at the indictment, which is on the website, www.kevinmitnick.com or freekevin.com, and you'll see what he's charged with. He's charged with calling up companies, pretending he's somebody he's not. He's also charged with copying files. I mean, I'm not making light of this. That is what he's charged with, copying files. Not charged with stealing money, not charged with taking a sledgehammer to something, not charged with murder or, you know, even robbing a bank like those Chinese hackers. Nothing like that. So, charged with software theft, that's technically correct because they consider copying a program to be theft, even though I really have problems with that.
That's definitely arguable.
Wire fraud, that's a way of saying it, in my understanding. You know, wire, anything can be wire fraud. But interception of wire communications, I mean, that was Satomo Shimomura who did that. He was the one who was intercepting wire communications. And computer vandalism, where are they getting this from?
Well, you take a can of spray paint to the monitor and...
He has not been accused of anything like that, ever. All right, Mitnick, the first hacker ever to have appeared on an FBI wanted poster. Oh, boy, now where did they get this from? First of all, we can't find an FBI wanted poster anywhere that has Kevin's picture or name on it. There was a U.S. Marshals poster, which I believe is in the John Lipman book, Fugitive Game. That's not the same thing as being on the FBI's most wanted list, which is the other mistruth that's being spread all over the place. And also, you know, the first hacker ever to have appeared on an FBI wanted poster, is that necessarily true as well? I don't know for sure. I mean, did these guys check that out? Seems to me like they probably didn't. Faces up to 12 years in prison if he is found guilty. And that last fact, I really don't know what he's facing because the whole thing is so crazy. He could be facing
He's facing more than that, if depending on how they score the sentencing guidelines.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it could be a huge amount. What were you facing when you were in prison, Bernie?
15 years and a $500,000 fine. Or, well, if all three charges were run concurrent or consecutively, it could have been 45 years and $1.5 million.
So Kevin's getting off light if he gets out in 12 years.
Before the government said involved no victims.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. Now, that's the kind of record I would like to see in the Guinness Book of World Records. You know, most unjust apprehension of somebody in this country. Why don't you see things like that? You know, I thought the Guinness Book of World Records was somewhat, non-biased. It was just numbers, facts and numbers. But here, you know, you're seeing editorial comments getting into these things and just believing the mistruths that are being spread around. So let's close the book on that and throw that thing away. Ugh. God, horrible. All right, second on the phone call, 212-209-2900. Good evening, you're on Off the Hook.
Hello?
Yes, it's you.
Okay, I just wanted to make a comment relating to your earlier talking about encryption and how there's more and more legislation coming on board to try and limit strong encryption both internationally and nationally. I have a rather fun fact to relate to you in that I have a online brokerage account, and the site certificate, when I first started deciding to trade online, I got the domestic version of Netscape. And the site certificate that my brokerage house constantly gives to me every time I make a session is 128-bit, and it's issued by a company in Cape Town, South Africa, even though it's supposedly, obviously, domestic encryption only. And I just thought that's just incredibly, not necessarily ironic, but just goes to show you that
Remember the key phrase, selectively enforced.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. I mean, you could be seen as some sort of international terrorist because you have this South African encryption scheme on your computer.
Well, no, it's the site certificate that says that the brokerage house is actually the brokerage house and so on and so forth is actually issued by a company out in Cape Town, South Africa. But the point is that it's a 128-bit key as opposed to 40-bit. And it's coming. It's being issued by a company that's obviously outside of the United States, way outside the United States. Could possibly even be considered a third world country by certain people in the United States. So,
that's interesting. That's absolutely interesting. Yes.
An interesting point. If you are interested in upgrading your browser from the international encryption standard, the 40-bit key, to your full 128-bit key capability,
is this legal?
Well, it gets kind of tricky. You can go to a site, www.fortify.net. They have a wonderful little program for Windows 95 and Unix. Unfortunately, they don't have a Mac version yet, I don't believe, where the capability of 128-bit keys is shipped in every single version of Netscape.
Is that legal?
I don't know, but if you run this little program, you can turn it back
Everything
on.
Everything I do from the moment I wake up until the moment I go to sleep at night is prefaced with the question,
legal?
Is this legal?
Isn't that very sad that you have to do that in this country of all of the world? You have to keep asking yourself, is what I'm doing illegal?
I don't believe in questioning myself.
Oh, okay.
Yes, I don't know if that's legal either. Good evening, you're on Off the Hook. Okay, that was your big moment. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Yeah, did you guys like the theme park, Six Flags hack?
Ah, yes. Six Flags got hacked last night. That's,
yeah,
that was kind of interesting.
My friends did good work. What do you think?
I'm sorry?
My friends did good work. What do you think?
You're saying you're affiliated with this somehow, huh?
No.
Oh, okay.
No,
I'm not saying,
not saying that at all.
Okay, you're not... You're not saying you're affiliated with it or you're not affiliated with it. You're just basically not saying anything about it.
Right, right. I'm just saying it's good work.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'll put it that way. It's not, you know, we do have a copy of it on our website, and the reason it's there is because that's a rather major site, Six Flags. Imagine all these people, you know, looking into this thing.
It was late at night, and, you know, no one really went to visit it. But if they did, you'd see a really well-hung squirrel.
Yeah, well, you certainly saw something interesting, and if you want to see that, just go to the 2600 website where we have it archived. But again, you know, it's not exactly the kind of thing that, you know, we promote, but it did happen to a rather big site, you know, and you can't ignore things like that. I'm sure Six Flags wanted to ignore it, but unfortunately, people who were planning their amusement park vacations got one hell of an amusement last night. All right, 212-209-2900. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Oh, hi. Yeah, I was just wondering, I hadn't heard this mentioned on your show in June of this year. Are you aware of the military transmitter that came online in Alaska that goes under the acronym HARP?
Yes.
I never heard about this. What's this all about?
HARP. I'm not sure the whole acronym stands for.
It's the High Altitude Auroral Research Project.
There you go.
Well, somehow I'm in the dark on this, so fill me in. What's this all about?
According to the government, it's supposed to be radio frequency, high frequency transmitter that is supposed to bounce off some part of the atmosphere and search for underground tunnels and chambers and things. But there are other reports from other sources saying that it's doing all kinds of really awful, awful things, like causing depression in people all over the place because they can't control where the signal goes. It's supposedly causing the weird weather things, or a lot of the weird weather things are attributed to this this thing, this transmitter.
It's an interesting situation because there are actual patents for this device on file with the U.S. Patent Office, which you can review, and supposedly it's just supposed to perform research into high atmospheric phenomenon and, like, actually trying to stimulate the aurora. However, theories have gone to mind control, to mapping the core of the Earth, where they're now saying they found, like, this crystalline structure in the molten core. And it's a lot of things have been attributed to it. It's becoming like the next Area 51, where any strangeness that's out there can be thrown to HARP.
Yeah, I'm not saying one way or the other. I just try, you know, just making you aware that it did come online in June. I mean, it is broadcasting.
Oh, it's working.
Yeah. So I just wanted to make a manual, whoever might not be aware of it.
No, well, you certainly have made me aware of it. Now, something else to worry about.
I don't know what to attribute this to, true or not true about it, but there's a thing. Are you aware of a thing called Web Ferret or the different ferrets? There are search tools that you can use on the Internet, and, like, Web Ferret will go out and use a bunch of search engines and create this list of sites and things.
I've heard of things like that, yes.
Yeah.
I used to have a page like that.
It's really an amazing thing, but I have a list of sites dealing with HARP that, you know, I haven't investigated them all or anything, but they're, you know, I mean, so you can use these tools to get a lot of information really quickly, or find out where you can go.
Yeah, that's another great thing about 1998. You've found a lot of people being able to do private research on the web, where if it interests you, you can really go out and find a lot of this material, because everybody is dumping everything they can
online.
Right.
And that's the importance of the net, is the fact that this information isn't being suppressed, at least not yet, and that's why we have to defend the right to freedom of information that currently exists there. Okay, let's see if we can squeeze in one or two more. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Yes. 1998 is the year that the FCC met Ken Ardio.
That's right.
Yeah, that was nice. And it was also the same year that Richard Lee was heard on six continents with
Criminality. Could you tell us a little bit about what that is?
Oh, Canardio was an 8.5-foot Pinocchio likeness of the FCC chairman, Kennard.
This happened in Washington, D.C.?
He was actually connected by strings to the NAB monster, who was connected to the corporate tower. His hands were as heavy as cement in the wind. And I should get on and say, though, that it was also the year that Richard Lee was a criminal in seven continents at the same time and didn't even know it because he thought he had 20-watt status.
That may be a reference to Richard Lee's attendance at a pirate radio conference in Philadelphia, to which he was invited. In
you
all
never fairness. Know where that microphone will
and,
bring you.
Seven continents?
He knowingly broadcast over a pirate radio station.
More than once. He's sort of like, I hate to make the comparison, like Elliot Ness when he blew the foam off the... off the beer and took a swig. The only thing is that Elliot Ness was wholly earnest and Richard Lee is wholly a criminal. 1999 is going to be the year when Guinness Book of World Records, which is very unbiased, is going to say that the most frustrated government agency in the world of all times.
All right, thanks for filling us in on that. Let's take one more phone call. Good evening, you're on the air.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead. Make it quick.
Yeah, hi. You'd wondered what happened to Stephen Glass. He is now a law student at Georgetown University, which I read in the Pennsylvania Gazette. And it says, recently qualified for the law review, but for personal reasons has declined to participate. Thank God.
Well, good. Thanks for the info.
Okay. Bye.
Thanks for calling. And we're just about out of time. Any final thoughts from our panelists on this year that has just gone by and the next year that looms ahead?
Maybe on a personal note, but perhaps a little moment of silence for John Postel, a gentleman who passed away this year, the keeper of the RFCs and a very influential person in the weaning of the Internet as we know it today.
Mm-hmm. Well, without him, are we going to face mass chaos?
Well, who knows? He was a very intelligent man, and he had a handle on things. And well, anyway, I'll miss him.
Mm-hmm.
He's a nice guy.
All right, Horshop.
High-end bandwidth. Let's see, cable modems went up, ADSL went up, and now the backbones, I think, in the next year are going to be showing some signs of stress.
Yeah, I think so. I think they might already be showing signs of stress.
Yeah, and I'm waiting to see what'll happen there. I'm praying that the telcos will let their prices down so we can create more
Don't pray, demand. That's what you have to do. People have to be standing up to these things a little bit more, you know? We're the ones ultimately in charge.
Well, then I demand a T3.
That's awfully cocky of you, but all right, go ahead and demand if you want. Bernie S., how about you?
I know everybody's tired of hearing about Kevin Mitnick, but just be glad it's not you who's locked up for something inconsequential.
Yeah, for those of you tired of hearing about Kevin Mitnick, imagine how tired Kevin Mitnick is hearing about Kevin Mitnick. You know, every day he's got to deal with it. Every day in prison, it's really pretty sad. If you want to send email to Kevin, you can do so by mailing kmitnick at 2600.com. We'll forward it right over to him. And, of course, if you want to send us mail, OTH at 2600.com. And who knows, maybe we'll read it out over the air. Till next week, this is Emmanuel for Porkchop Isaac and Bernie S. Have yourselves a happy new year. And just remember to always question what you're told, stay free, all that kind of nice jazz there. And keep listening to WBAI. Good night. Okay, hold on. I got to stop the theme there for a second. We forgot to mention something very important. That's the 2600 meeting this Friday. Isaac, get back here. You heard some information I want you to relay to the people.
I called a couple of people over at Citicorp. Different offices seem to have a different understanding of whether or not they're open on the 1st.
Well, I called Barnes & Noble, and they said they were open.
Well,
they didn't know what their name was at first. It took them 5 seconds to say Barnes & Noble, but...
The receptionist says that they are open. The real estate office says that the lobby's open, but the train thing is closed.
Well, we don't care about the train thing.
Well, anybody who's interested in the train might miss it. So.
All right, well, look, how about this? Barnes & Noble is open, so people can show up at Barnes & Noble in that little, like, food court thing they have in there this Friday. And if you don't want to do that, just show up next Friday in the atrium, assuming that the atrium is closed this Friday coming up, okay?
I'll be there both.
All right, everybody's happy. We'll see you at one of the meetings sometime. Good night. I cut myself while shaving. Now I can't make a call. I couldn't get much worse. But if it's good, it would. So Billy Bones was a bit expect the worst. I hope that's understood. But Billy Bones.
What will you remember about
1998?
1998? This is the year when the president was disgraced, Congress was disgraced.
The president gets impeached, the U.S. bombs Iraq.
How much more fun could we have had this past year?
It's the government of sex and violence. That's 1998.
Best year ever.
Who wants to have some fun?
Tune in for a shortcut through...